Yes, good morning and a big welcome to This Is Your Racing Life. I've got a very special guest here this morning from the media side, from the media in the UK, and my guest is Hayley Moore, and she is an amateur rider over there in the UK. She's an aspiring race caller, and she's had a time over here with our Spring Carnival. Good morning and welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me along. It's a good time to be in town, actually, with everything that's been going on over the last few weeks.
So what brings you to Melbourne?
Well, I was lucky enough to be brought over to help with the international coverage, the runners that were taking part during the carnival, and racing.com have brought me in as their international expert. So hopefully I've been able to bring a little bit of knowledge from back in the UK and all the horses that were racing in Ireland and France and Germany that were taking part during the carnival, just to give people that extra bit of knowledge about them, a bit of a different insight. Obviously, I'm familiar with my racing back home in the UK and Ireland and France and Germany. And it's difficult to kind of draw a comparison when they're coming over here. And obviously, there's such a tradition over here. You can draw them comparisons year after year with other horses, which is, I think, helpful when you're looking at the form and seeing, you know, what past horses have done. But it was just to give probably the punters, you know, a bit more help so that they know what they've got. So it's been a fantastic few weeks. I've loved going out to Werribee, getting to know the horses even better myself from what I've seen in the UK. I think that's a unique opportunity that you can have in the build-up to the big race or the other races that they're taking in on the way, and seeing how they develop, how they're training. And it just gives you that extra bit of insight, I think, coming into a race. So I've certainly learnt a lot this trip, and it's made me really want to come back in the future.
It's a global sport, we know that, and the world's shrinking, as we all say. But tell me, you've travelled with horses out here before.
Yeah, I was really lucky. Herman Brown was a Dubai-based South African trainer who had a good, strong team with him, lovely horses, and one of them was Marillion. And we know that the quarantine rules are very strict, especially with horses coming to Australia. And the plan was for Marillion to, the long-term target would be the Melbourne Cup. So thankfully, my brother Ryan Moore rode him in Dubai and suggested to Herman Brown, send him to my father, Gary Moore, and he can race in the UK during the summer, which is a good preparation. There's good trial races for the Melbourne Cup, especially if you know you need to get a run. And obviously then the quarantine's a lot more straightforward as opposed to going back to South Africa, then you have to go via Mauritius. It's very, very complicated. So it seemed a logical route would be to go back to the UK, get the horse racing over there, and then, you know, hopefully long term get him set for the Melbourne Cup. So I was fortunate enough at home to wake up in the mornings and ride him out, got to know him very well, and then he, you know, he qualified to come over. And they asked me if I'd bring him. He then ran in Herman Brown's name, and I was fortunate enough to travel with him. I was the track rider, I was the strapper, had a very good assistant trainer in Nico Iguacel, who was alongside Herman Brown at the time. And it was the most wonderful experience, not only because he was a gorgeous horse, he was a lovely, lovely type of horse, really beautiful, but he was a great ride. He had a lot of ability. And it was probably the most nerve-wracking thing I'd ever done. I'm a pretty laid-back person, but leading that horse out in front of the hundreds of thousands of people at Flemington, it was 2009, and I felt physically quite sick. It was, I think it was such a long build-up. It was such a long-term plan, but it was incredible to be a part of it. You know, you've got such huge coverage over here, and I was just feeling so excited. I think that it's just one of a kind, the Melbourne Cup, and to have been a part of it with a runner, it blew me away.
So you wanted to come back. You're back in a different role. Now, you mentioned Ryan Moore, your brother. That's the champion jockey, one of the champion jockeys of the world. Wow, what a rider. We saw him ride in the Melbourne Cup. He didn't have much luck. He got well back on Bondi Beach, but we saw him win a race earlier in the day. And he'd come from Japan. He won the Group 1 Tenno show on the Sunday, travelled through the night. One of the biggest races in Japan, travelled through the night and landed here on Monday and rode on Cup Day.
Yeah, I Don't think he came off of that flight in good form, because he certainly didn't. He came off, he was pretty tired and grumpy. And I tried to do an interview with him about, you know, his chance on Bondi Beach, and I didn't get much out of him. It really was drawing blood from a stone. And so we took him off, had a nice feed, and then we retried again, and he was a lot happier. I think he was struggling with the old jet lag, so it is tough. But you know, we had a good lunch, and then we stepped back into reporter mode, which was quite fun, you know, interviewing my brother, the man that never wants to speak. So yeah, he put me straight, gave us all the information we needed to know. Unfortunately, Bondi Beach, you know, the run, nothing really materialised. I thought it was a poor performance for whatever reason. The horse just wasn't up on his best form. But yeah, it was great that he can fly around the world, get off a plane, turn up. Thankfully, Kinnamar provided him with a lovely win for Chris Waller, who I think has done particularly well with that horse. And, you know, he was into the mode, off to the Melbourne Cup, and then a couple of other rides. And it's incredible, really, his lifestyle this time of year. He's just in and out. He rocks up. But it just doesn't matter. I think if you're as good as him with the racing brain, the coolness, how he takes on his racing, he can just carry on doing it at the top of his game. He just treats every race like it's just a normal one. He doesn't let nerves get in the way. He's just so down to earth. He's never changed. He's always been very shy as a person, but just hugely driven and dedicated. Like I've really struggled to meet a jockey more dedicated than him. You know, he always used to be very focused on racing, but the last few years, he's finally tuned himself, whether it's from his diet, you know, all the right foods he's eating, his fitness. He's got a very strict regime. So he's just, I look at him now and he's just this physical ball of muscle. And I think he's got even stronger and stronger over the last few years. And I think that's coming through in his riding. But he's such a beautifully balanced rider. The decision making for me impresses me, you know, every time. Yeah, sometimes he gets it wrong. There was a few incidents at Royal Ascot which were probably very frustrating, when he's just coming, knocking on the door, coming second because of possibly the wrong decision. But that's race riding. You're going to get that. But he is just, I think, very cool, great judge of pace. He's got a good relationship with horses, and he's just naturally very talented. You know, it's always come very natural to him. That's one thing that stands out the most. But I mean, look, to be the best, you've got to work hard at it, and he's certainly done that. But he just manages to come off, go around the world, he gets himself focused. He's an intelligent person as well, which I think helps. you know, he was always very bright at school as well. It just happened that he was good enough to be a sports person. So I think that's everyone's dream in life, isn't it? Well, you know, you get such a praise in life if you can be a successful sportsman, as opposed to probably a successful banker. I don't know many bankers, but he just, I think, was fortunate enough to be talented to do something that he enjoys.
Are you a racing family? I presume you are.
Yeah, we are. My grandfather trained. He was a real character, very opposite to Ryan, very outgoing and a real joker. And he was a great man. He didn't have the best of horses, but he did well with what he had. He was a car dealer that had a passion for horse racing. And he was, well, you know, he was very well known on the local racetracks back home. And he would turn up with the most random ponies when we were younger that were unbroken. They'd bought for a packet of polos, as he would say. And that was, I think, probably what kick-started getting all of us into riding and riding properly, because we had to break the horses in ourselves. And
how many children?
Well, between my brothers and all of us, so Ryan's the oldest, and there's Jamie, who's a very successful jump jockey back home. Then there's myself. I do a bit of both as an amateur flat and jump. And then there's my younger brother Josh, who's a very good jump jockey as well. Unfortunately, he's about 6 foot tall, so he's definitely suffers the most with sort of keeping his weight down, whereas Ryan's obviously quite a small framed and a lot shorter than that. So I've got two very good jump jockeys and an incredibly successful flat jockey brother.
It's interesting, whenever I talk to people about where it all started, invariably, in fact, 99% of the time, it goes back, yeah, we had ponies. We had ponies from when I could walk at three or four, I was on the back of a pony. And it's sort of ingrained in you, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You, I think, either love it or you hate it. And my parents were very laid back. They didn't push us into doing it at all. So for us, it was just a genuine passion, which I think helped. I mean, Ryan had other interests. He loved his football and he was very good at football as well. And unfortunately, he was just a bit too small, really, to make it any further. But he, you know, played to a good level. And I think the dream would have been to be a footballer, probably pays better and is a lot easier than, and a lot safer than being a jockey as well. But he, you know, he loved his horses. He was always very a good rider at a young age. And it was something that we all enjoyed. I think we've got a lot to thank our parents for, and my, you know, my grandparents for that as well, for getting us involved from such a young age.
And what about sort of mishaps in racing? Has he experienced any of the bad ones? Had a couple of bad crashes?
Yeah, he has, unfortunately, which is, you know, I suppose unusual as a flat jockey, but he's had incidents where he's had some horses slip up. You know, he's hurt him, he's had broken bones, which is probably, with hindsight, lucky that he's walked away, because when you have a fall on the flat, it's even worse probably than over the jumps, due to the fact that they are going that much quicker. And he's thankfully, and touch wood, he's always come back. You know, it's just been a short setback, you know, the odd broken bones, and nothing too much of an issue to get over. But my brothers, all three of them are plagued with constant injuries. It's kind of makes you remember that it is a hugely dangerous sport. We see all the stewards' inquiries over here. You know, you're very strict on your jockeys, and I think we forget that it is because of a safety thing that it comes down to. And look, you do always worry about them going out there. I've struggled to watch the Grand National, especially when my brothers are riding in that, because that is obviously a very big size field and they're very big fences. So I just always, you do have that in the back of the mind, and it's, you just pray that everything goes right for them every day.
We hear your riders from the UK and riders from around the world, and their main complaint really is that we ride too tight. That's never going to change here. That's just the way it is. It's part of our culture. And there are times I know, as a racing commentator calling the field, and I'll think, my God, they're racing so tight. Mm. You know, it's just one clip of heels and it's, and down they go. You see that yourself and you ride. You know what I'm talking about. Do we, you know, from your perspective, do we ride too tight in Australia?
Yeah, it is. I think people get carried away about, you know, racing wide and giving you're very into your facts and figures after the, you know, the post-race data that comes through. I quite liked watching the Melbourne Cup because there was a bit more pace on, everyone was that bit more spread out, and it was like watching a European race for once. And it is, you know, you've got to remember it is a dangerous sport. And unfortunately, you know, two jockeys have hopefully walked away from a nasty incident this week back in the UK. And it is sad. You know, we all know the dangers that they face. But I would, like to, I suppose it's the way that you steady up the pace of your contests, that it makes everything so sort of short margined. You know, there's not a lot of room when you're racing. And it would be nice to see everyone race a bit more spread out, but then I think the critics would step in and absolutely hammer them. So you daren't as a jockey, and you do race tight, and I suppose that it's just the way it'll always be. And it's just something where, as an international jockey, you've got to adapt to when you come over. So I don't think it will ever change, and I just pray that, you know, things go right for everyone, because it's a sport, it's meant to be enjoyed, but it is obviously very dangerous.
You must be amazed, you know, when you, if you go to Royal Ascot, and I've done that a few times, six race cards, five days, so 30 races over 5 days. Here, 9 races on Derby Day, 10 races, massive fields on Cup Day. Big difference.
A huge difference. My stamina was sapped yesterday evening. Everyone's like, come on, we've got to go out, we've got to go and, you know, party. And after a few drinks, I was absolutely ready. I was cooked to go to bed. So very dull, very boring indeed. But I mean, it's a fair credit to all the coverage, you know, the commentators, to remember all those horses. It's not easy. I think, you know, all the guys that are involved and all the people that I've been working with recently at racing.com, I've just been in awe of how they just know their horses inside out over here. They are very natural. You can see they just know their horses. I was lucky enough to be at breakfast with the best, and some of the guys I was working with, they recognized what the horses looked like coming out, you know, let alone without any, you know, without being told who they were or anything. And I thought, fair play to you. Now, there's not many, I think, people involved in the media that would recognize a horse, so that really amazed me. And it does take a lot of work and to get on top of the form and things. I think for the commentator it's very difficult, and the guys in the media that I've worked with have been so on the ball. You can see it's their passion, and it's going to have to be, because it couldn't be a job, because you just wouldn't be able to take in that, I think, that much information.
So true. Special guest this morning is Hayley Moore. She's an amateur jockey back in the UK, but also she's trying a hand at race calling, and she's helping with the racing.com coverage as well. So a young lady that's doing a lot in racing, and we'll come back after this break. This is Your Racing Life for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating life. We're talking with Hayley Moore this morning. Now, race calling. Wow. You're having a crack?
Yeah, it was something that I wasn't sure about. Had to be very brave to take it on, but it was something that I thought I could give it a go, due to the fact that over the years I've been, you know, at home watching the racing, dad's stuck in traffic, rings you on the hands-free. Can you talk through what's happening? I can't see our runner. It's before the modern technology that we've got today, thankfully. So I'm there at home, you know, describing where this is, our horses, and very one, you know, only the one horse to keep an eye on, which was quite cushy, quite easy. So when they wanted to find Britain's first female commentator, I thought, well, I've done a bit of that, I'll give that a go. Didn't quite, I think, factor in actually when you've got a field of 24 runners or something, what a different scenario that was. But I thought to myself, yeah, it's really strange that we don't have a female race commentator. It was something I thought, I wonder why not, you know. So when they set up the competition and, you know, thought it was a good way of getting started, actually, and it was an incredible journey that I went on, and it was very different, really, you know, having to go through all the horses, learn the colours, the names, the silks. And then you just want to take it that step further. You want to know why that horse is called, why has it got that name? And I have to admit, it was finally made me respect the race callers and how lucky we are, especially in the UK, what wonderful race callers we've got. And it made me really appreciate what they can do. And I think it's quite a thankless task, because no one ever gives you pats on the back, really. That they're very quick to criticize when you do something wrong. So full credit to race callers, because I think it is one of the most demanding jobs that I've taken on in the world of racing. Many different things I've tried, but the competition was an interesting one. So I took it on. It was nerve-wracking. I started off at Doncaster back home, and I had the biggest sides field on the day, but I think that's what gave me the nod to get through to the next round. And thankfully it went well, and then got through to the final, and it was incredible. I got to call races home at Ascot, and for me, Ascot's my most favourite place in the world, really, I think, for racing. And to be up there with the hearing myself come back, you know, it was quite an experience. Obviously it went very well. We had a vote and I was fortunate enough to win, but I do think that, if I'm honest, I was the best of a bad bunch. I just don't think there was enough women out there giving it a go, but I just hoped that it would be a way of opening doors for, you know, the better ones that are out there somewhere to come forward and go, oh yeah, that's something a lady can do.
We have Victoria Shaw, who's been doing it for a few years here, and she goes really well, and she's very committed, very dedicated, and I know you've met Victoria. It's a man's world, though. You know, it's tough. I'm a racing commentator. I've been doing it for over 40 years, and I know how tough it is, but how do you break the barrier down? I wish I could tell you how you do, and you're more than welcome to step up today on Saturday and call whichever one you want to do, but it's tough, and I suppose that is racing and this glass ceiling that we talk about, which brings us to Michelle Payne and this historic win on Prince of Penzance in the Melbourne Cup last year. You weren't here, but it resonated around the world, yeah, and continues to be discussed, and there's sort of a lot of fallout since, some good, some bad.
Yeah, I mean, she's a very talented rider, and you kind of hope that it would propel her riding career, you know, even further after having such a huge international success as that. Unfortunately, things probably haven't quite worked out, and it is a tough sport for women. You've got to really prove yourself, and I do have the belief that if you're good enough, you will get there. Unfortunately, I suppose fashion and trend can take its toll, and if you are a good jockey that can ride well, you're going to be overlooked by who's in fashion, who's having the big successes. It's easier to get on with the owners. You know, they want you, your hot stuff. I feel that if Michelle has faced that in her career, that, you know, being a woman's held her back, then that's what she's dealt with. That's how she's taken things on as an individual. But I feel back in the UK, if you're good enough, you'll get the chances. And it is tough. I suppose that there is still questions and, you know, why is it? But I suppose ultimately our best riders out there just are going to be male. We're closing the gap. But I suppose your top jockeys, your international, your best jocks are just going to carry on being male. We can do our best as females, I think, to get into the sport and serve it up as best we can. I think we've definitely got better lady riders out there now than ever. But I suppose it's just men are probably always going to be that bit stronger than women, like in any sport.
It's interesting with our apprentice academy here and our apprenticeship intake of young men and women. It's 50-50, or might even be more young girls coming in than boys. And they can probably control their weight a lot easier than the males, because we're all getting bigger, both sexes. And, you know, we see a lot of the girls riding, but still the doors don't open here. They don't. And it's an individual thing in so many ways. But as owners, it's a tough business. You know, we know it's a business of centimetres for high stakes, and it just hasn't changed.
No, that's right. And it does come down to the owners that are, you know, paying the bills, that rightfully want the best jockey on the day on their horse. You know, why wouldn't you if you have got such good prize money that you can win as well? And it just makes sense. You go for the best, don't you, that's available. I just kind of wish that, you know, we could carry on, you know, the females getting the opportunities, I suppose. But I can't see any immediate dramatic change. So I think it's just always going to carry on being quite tough for them. But I think you do see more women coming through now, which has changed a lot, you know, since even the last 20 years. Yeah. And it is thanks to people like Michelle who've gone out there and proven themselves and couldn't have done it on a better stage by winning the Melbourne Cup.
Every news agency would have picked up on her comment after the Melbourne Cup when she said anyone that said that females or thinks that the females aren't strong enough to do the job can get stuffed. That would have made a lot of headlines, I'm sure, in your country. What was the reaction over there?
Yeah, it certainly did make the headlines, and it just kind of triggered off a lot of chat. You know, are women treated with, you know, sort of as if they can't get the job done? And it just raised a lot of eyebrows, I think. And it just, I think, propelled a lot of the women out there. I think some of the girls would be thinking, yep, you know, good for you, Michelle. You're quite right. You know, we can prove ourselves. And look, she certainly proved everyone that day that she was good enough. She's a very talented rider. Back home in the UK, I think the apprentices that I've seen coming through are definitely getting better, getting more help, being given more opportunities as well. But they're certainly working hard to get there.
What sort of academy, what sort of training sort of situation do they have? Are they well looked after by the Jockey Club?
Yeah, it's really improved, actually, especially even the last 4 or 5 years. They're getting lots of support. They've got jockey coaches themselves. They're being told how to eat. They're being shown how to cook to keep their diets in check. I think over here, your weights are a lot lower than what we are back in the UK. So, you know, they're probably are going to be more chances for women over here. And you do see a lot of women leaving the UK to go to places like America, Australia, because they'll get more opportunities because there will be more rides at the lower weights, which is very important for them. And the men, obviously, being bigger, heavier, stronger, are going to struggle to do the lower weights, so they just simply can't ride them. But back in the UK, there's a good academy. You've got your jockey coaches that are guiding the women through. And I think that you do see a better apprentice. My slight concern is then when they've lost their claim and they're not apprentices anymore, where do they go on? I'm a bit disappointed that Hayley Turner, who would be our biggest lady rider riding, I think, for years, with what she's achieved, the amount of winners she's ridden, the amount of group success that she had as well, she's retired and she's barely in her 30s. And I think that kind of just shows you that longevity as a female is very, very tough in our sport.
What caused her to retire? Was it through injury or lack of opportunities? Because she's an outstanding rider.
Yeah, very good rider indeed. And no, it wasn't through injury. She's had some very nasty injuries over the years, but she's come back from them. But ultimately, her chances, they dried up. She wasn't getting very many opportunities. And her life became quite, I think, dull in racing. She'd been there on the big stage. She'd had the success. And she just didn't have any good relationships. She wasn't getting on nice horses on the big day. She wasn't there. Things just dried up for her. Some of her relationships with trainers that she'd had well established over the years had broken down, not due to anything, anything awful or any big fallout. It just, the trainers seemed to build up new relationships, whether that was when she was out during injury and things like that. And I think her career had just become, for her, quite stale. And she's such a wonderful person. She'd achieved so much that the opportunities she was getting just weren't like they used to be. And she'd been such a ambassador for us, such a role model, that I think anyone, if you've been up there at the top of your sport and then you're kind of pitching around at a lower level, it's tough, and she just probably didn't want to grind it out. There's opportunities for her to work in the media now, and she'll grasp them with both hands. But some of the jocks go into that dry stages in their life, and look, they come back, they get the success again, and they come out fighting, they get back in the winner's enclosure. And I don't doubt that if Hayley had given it a couple more years, she'd probably be back there again. She'd probably get on that good horse again, which everybody wants, that everyone needs. But it was potentially going to be a long time in the waiting, and she probably just thought, it's time to move on. I've had a good career, I've had a good few years of doing it, so I'll try my hand at something else. And she's a great person, she's got a wonderful personality, so she'll carry on being involved in our sport in a different capacity.
Hayley Moore is my guest this morning. You rode under the amateur side of racing, which is a heavier side. Mm. The amateurs here and particularly in Victoria, ride sort of a picnic circuit, and they ride for little or no money. There's not much prize money. It might be, say, $1,000 or $2,000 per race, and it's seasonal. They don't race all year round, and it's a heavier, higher scale of weights. But they never ride at Flemington, never ride at Caulfield. They never get close to even Cranbourne and places like that. They're on a very much a picnic. Mm-hmm. And it's very laid back, and it's a wonderful side of our racing here in Victoria. But yet your amateur racing can happen at the big tracks.
Oh, yeah, we're really lucky back in the UK. One of my favourite races is the Ladies Ascot contest that is on King George Day. So we've got, normally the Derby winner or something taking on the older horses at the season, and there's a wonderful crowd. It's probably the second biggest race meeting behind Royal Ascot that we have at Ascot. And we are fortunate to either have the race at the start of the day or after the King George, so the media can catch up with winning connections. And it's great because we're riding there on a really big day, and probably the public aren't too bothered about what we're doing, but for us, we're there, there's a great crowd, you kind of are on the big stage for the day, you've got all the top jocks around as well, and internationally, you've normally got all the best jockeys in the world racing.
I might just point out to our listeners, King George Day is like our Cox Plate Day.
Yes.
It's one of the great days of racing, so to be on that stage on that day, wow. Have you had any success in that race?
Yeah, I've been very lucky. I've managed to win it on a few occasions. So I've been absolutely blessed. You know, I kind of, if I win that race, I'm happy for the year in my amateur role. It's kind of what we, you know, strive for. We've got big race meetings at York, which is a great track as well. And I think Francesca Camani's been very successful in that. You get to win your weight in champagne, which is great. So there's always a bit of fun. There's a bit of prestige there. And for me, it's about, you know, having those big days. And it works really well. And back in the UK this year, we've got a new series to look forward to, where they are putting on a women's series, again, to give lady riders more opportunities. And that's professional and amateur riders that are going to come together. It's called the Silk Series. And that's going to be run over 9 race meetings across Britain, with, you know, a final on our St. Ledger meeting. So again, another big occasion. So I think it's nice the way that we're brought into the big days and the ladies' days, and they're quite like having a female token race on their ladies' days. You put ladies at the front of a race day in Britain and the crowds flock in. It's definitely a good marketing move back home. But we are lucky. There's a good program for amateurs. The jumping scene's very big as well. Like, you can ride at the Cheltenham Festival, and some of our best riders that are female actually never become professionals. They stay as amateurs so they can then clean up in the amateur races.
We're speaking with Hayley Moore, guest this morning on This Is Your Racing Life. Back with Hayley in just a moment for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Life. I'm with Hayley Moore, and we're talking about In the Saddle. Now, have you been over the jumps?
I have, yeah. I've been fortunate enough to ride at Cheltenham, which is a great place. It is my favourite jump track.
I've spoken to Aussies that have been there to the Cheltenham Festival, and a couple of good judges, you know, guys you listen to and, you know, you respect their opinion, they say it is the best festival of racing in the world. Yeah?
It is, yeah. There's plenty of crack, as the Irish would say, and that is because they basically come over and dominate. So the Guinness Festival, as I think it really is, it is a great, vibrant place that you can't really beat it, actually. Everyone's very passionate, and the good thing is with the jumpers back at the Cheltenham Festival, you see the horses come out year after year, so you get to know them. I'm sure a lot of the Aussies will be very familiar with Willie Mullins, who absolutely dominates at the track as well, who's obviously coming over here now with his good hurdlers as well, and trying to take on the Melbourne Cup, having come so close with horses like Max Dynamite. But it is a wonderful place, and to ride around Cheltenham, you've got to, you know, feel very lucky to have a winner there. Is incredible. I think my favourite day was when my father thankfully trained the champion chaser. We had a lovely horse called Sada Grugi, and it was great because it was a syndicate based ownership and just your normal hairdressing people, which is quite kind of unusual these days, but it's getting out there. It's letting your kind of average person that doesn't have a high-flying career and with lots of money be a part of racing, which I think is a great thing that you can have over in Australia, the way that everyone gets involved and can have a share in a horse. And the beauty of the festival is that it's just got so much energy about it, and I recommend anyone, if they've never made it over to the Cheltenham Festival, to get over, because it is just non-stop. It is 4 days of absolutely fabulous fun. It is just incredible. And every day there's something to look forward to. You know, obviously it probably peaks with the Gold Cup, but personally probably I love the Champion Chase because you've got 2 mile over the fences. It is fast. You think of the Melbourne Cup and how quick they go in that race for 2 miles. Imagine putting fences. And they actually go faster. It's very strange, but they go flat out, and it's something to behold.
Well, I look at those fences at Aintree and at Cheltenham. We see, you know, television coverage here, and they're massive. How do you do that?
Well, they can all jump. They thankfully take to it well, and we've got good riders. And I mean, look.
What about you?
Well, I've never been lucky enough to go over the Grand National fences. It's something that I think I would like to keep trying to do. Plenty of amateurs have done. They've got the Fox Hunters race where they aim, you know, to get over the fences, the Grand National fences, as it were. And it's it is unique. And I mean, Aintree is quite frightening. You go and stand next to them and the fences just absolutely tower over you. But it's a wonderful, wonderful race. I think it's probably got a similar build up to the Melbourne Cup. because of its uniqueness as well, with all the fences, the amount of size of the fields, the distance that it's run over. But I mean, I one day would love to go over them. I haven't got there yet. My dad, I think, is thinking, no, please don't. I've got two other brothers that do that, and it's petrifying to watch them. So, but look, if you've got a good enough horse that's got the talent, there's nothing better, actually. And I love watching the horses progress. Sometimes they come from the flat racing, sometimes they've, you know, store horses that you teach to jump, and yeah, they take to it, they love it. And what I love is, even if you lose your jockey and you've got a loose horse, they still carry on jumping them, you know. They just jump for fun, and it is a wonderful race that we have.
The dominance of stables and conglomerates like Coolmore and Godolphin, what effect does that have on English racing? Like, they're set in stone. They've been there for close to 30 years. I think Godolphin and Coolmore have been there a lot longer. Is it damaging? What's your take on it?
They clearly dominate. Aidan O'Brien's success, what he's been able to achieve. He comes over and he very much kind of rules the roost in Ireland. And, you know, he's hugely competitive as well. But Godolphin, I think, have got some wonderful horses in their teams. And to be honest with you, I don't think that they ruin it for anyone. I think they just set the bar and make it hugely competitive. But there's still opportunities out there for everyone to take part. Obviously, their stallion fees are quite expensive with all their wonderful horses. But the way that they brought the quality in, it's a shame, I think, in Australia, that stamina breeding seems to have completely disappeared, which is why we've come over and dominated with what we would class as average middle distance, you know, average stayers, especially like in your with Kiwi, who I adore. I think he's the most genuine, biggest hearted horse that I've seen in a long time. He ran so well in the Melbourne Cup, you know, but he back home wasn't anything to shout home about. Yeah. Luckily, he's a straightforward character. He's been handled and prepared beautifully by Team Godolphin coming into all his races over here. But yeah, they're not anything special back home yet. We're able to come over and dominate. So I'd love for the Australian breeding industry to try and put a bit of stamina back into the horses. But back home, I love in the UK that we've got that mixture, we've got that diversity. You know, it's wonderful to have the sprinters, the stayers. Aidan O'Brien, I think, ultimately dominates with all the wonderful Galileo progenies that we get to see. But there's opportunity for everything, and I think it just makes it competitive. I think it's tougher in Ireland to really compete against the top trainers. But I don't know. I think back in the UK, we saw that with our St. Ledger winner, Harbour Laura Mongan, who's just a very small trainer, you know, and she went and won a classic. It can happen in England. So I just think that they keep the racing at a good level, and thankfully we can come over and be competitive when we do make an international trip to the Melbourne Cup.
I remember about 20 years ago, and one of Sheikh Mohammed's, one of the Godolphin horses, won the Racing Post Trophy. It would have been about 20 years ago. And part of the ritual was that the stable, the winning owner, would make a speech at a dinner. And it would be 6 months later, for some reason. That's when they presented the trophy. And it was Sheikh Mohammed's racing manager at the time. And he sent a warning to British Racing that unless prize money increased, Sheikh Mohammed would be seriously looking at taking all his interest out of British racing. And it sent shockwaves through the industry, because someone pointed out if he pulled out of Newmarket, for instance, the Dole queue would be four laps of the town. That's how many people he employs either at the stables or out at Dellam Hall. So it was an interesting call, and he got what he wanted, but he was entitled to get it, if you know what I mean, as far as prize money, because it wasn't worth his while. It just wasn't working in terms of what he was putting in and what was coming back.
Our prize money is a strong talking point back in the UK. It's very disappointing. You know, we've supposedly got the best horses, you know, England and Ireland, around the whole world, arguably, apart from when you have your black caviars coming over to dominate. And it is disappointing. And the most notable thing is how much prize money Charlie Appleby's picked up in a very short space of time with what we would class as, you know, moderate kind of stayers back home, and they've just earned an absolute fortune. You're talking earnings of like a few years if you're lucky enough to keep a horse sound and be successful. So our prize money is something that we're always trying to look at, trying to build on. I can see why, you know, Sheikh Mohammed was disappointed, and it does make you wonder. I suppose thankfully you've got the studge value, and that's why you need to go and win the big races so that you can have a career. And unfortunately then you lose horses at a very young age, you know, so they go and have their stallion career because they're not going to win it in prize money. Unfortunately it is a bit desperate. And it makes, you know, working in the industry quite tough for trainers. It doesn't make any logical sense to own a horse in the UK unless you've got a very, very good one, because it rarely does pay for itself.
Mm. Claire Balding has recently retired or about to retire, and she has been the leading commentator in regard of men or women. It doesn't matter. She's been outstanding with the BBC, and the BBC have now cut their racing coverage, as we know, which is a huge blow to racing, I'm sure. Who replaces Claire Balding? Do you aspire for that?
I don't know if I'd ever be able to replace her. She's been like Great Britain's jewel, really. Her Olympic coverage, she's absolutely so passionate, and the way she turns her hand to any sport. She's brought the coverage of horse racing completely alive to the person sat at home, and she's a great loss not to have her on, you know, covering the racing. So I think in my wildest dreams I'd like to think that I'd fill her shoes, but I probably love the sport as much as her, just don't think I'd be as intelligent as our dear Claire Balding.
I think you're selling yourself a bit short. Have you enjoyed your time with the racing coverage on racing.com here? I was in the caller's box doing radio, so I didn't see much of you, but I'd heard about you. That's why I wanted to talk to you this morning. What did you learn from... It's a great experience to travel anywhere and work with a different team. Was that the case here?
Yeah, oh, massively. It's been a wonderful experience. I've gotten to know a lot of people, a lot of passionate people about the sport. I love listening to their insights and, you know, how they analyse their racing. Made a lot of friends as well on the way. I think that the pace of the coverage that I've been a part of has been, you know, second to none. There's been a little bit for everyone. It's kind of breaking the mould. You know, we've got, and obviously there are a lot of men on the coverage, and there's a few of us women that are seeping, kind of getting to be a part of it as well. So you do have to sort of, I think, you know, be quite tough and mix it with the boys, but thankfully they've all been incredibly supportive, very welcoming, and just very enlightening. You know, I've learned a lot being with them, and most importantly they're so infectious with how much they love their racing, they love their horses, they love the sport, and they're just so enthusiastic that I just wish that could be carried across everywhere, because then it will just get more people interested, more people involved, and reach out to hopefully the next generation coming through.
What do you go home to, Hayley? What are you going back to do?
A cold, cold winter, and also the jump racing kicks off. So I'll be at the Cheltenham opening meeting. So I'll be back with the jump action. Then we've
got, in action.
No, I think I need to firstly go back to the gym, because I've been sidestepping that since I've been here. And I've normally I start my day by getting on four or five of my dad's horses in the morning. He's got about 110 horses at home, so we're never short of anything to do. We don't sit around twiddling our thumbs back at home, unfortunately. So I'll be having a big shock to my system, I think, Tuesday morning when I get back on a horse and haven't sat on one for a while, and I'll probably be aching. But then we'll be on to Cheltenham, then we've got Sandown, which is another group one day or grade one day over the, you know, the fences again. We've got a Tingle Creek meeting, and it is full flow with the jump scene. And then it's quite good. We've got a nice initiative on the all weather that keeps going during our winter months, and that builds up to a big day on Good Friday, which I've heard is now going to be the case over here. So there's not hardly a day without any racing, apart from maybe Christmas Day as it stands. But that's a good day, a good climax as well. So that'll certainly keep us all busy, the all-weather racing, the jump action, and hopefully finding a few winners on the way.
Delighted to meet with you and to hear your story in racing. That's what this program's all about. And we'd love to see you back again and travel safe home, won't you?
Yeah, and I thank you very much. It would be a dream to come back. And once you've got a taste, I think, of being over here and being a part of the carnival, it is just something that you can't top. It is one of the most, I think, special carnivals. I've been lucky enough, like yourself, to go around the world, and yet this place for me, I think, tops them all. And Melbourne Cup Day, it really is just something quite phenomenal.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.